Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
And here we are for the December edition of Backbeat Radio on HealthyLife.net. I'm Jay Cruz checking in, and I have a friend of mine today who's going to be the guest, talking about a little bit of his life as a musician, guitar player, and now in some guitar auctions and guitar reselling. His name is Willem McCormick, and he's actually calling me from a top-secret location in Louisiana. Willem, where are you right now?
It's a definite top secret. I can't tell you. That's how secret it is. I'm actually returning a rental car, and I was looking around the rental office for a place for the that was kind of quiet enough for the interview, and there was none. So I went outside, and then all you hear is zooming cars in the background from the highway nearby. So I said, hey, you guys mind if I go sit in my rental car for a little while until my ride comes? I have to have a quiet background, so people can hear me talking or whatever.
Well, as long as they don't charge you extra rent for the interview that we're going to be doing here.
I guess they could have said that they'll charge me extra, but they didn't. They said, it's cool, you can chill.
Right on. So obviously it's not so in demand at the moment, but... Willem, you're involved with some guitar auctions coming up, and among some of the artists that we'll be able to bid on, and we'll give out that site here in just a bit. But you've got some guitars from Eric Clapton, Greg Allman, and one that certainly piques my interest, one from Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yep, sure enough, Stevie Ray Vaughan. It's the guitar he played back in his youth before he got full stream into the blues.
Yeah, he was pretty famous for that Fender Strat that he played that looked like he'd been playing it pretty much his whole life. In fact, there's a lot of guitar companies that have, tried to recreate that relic look and charge a lot of money for it. But that was the one he was most famous for. But this is not the guitar that is up for auction at the moment, right?
No, there's some articles online that you can find, there's an article that's called something about, I forget how they worded it, but they said rare guitars that Stevie Ray Vaughan played that you weren't aware of. Like, a lot of people, know him playing a Fender Stratocaster and multiple Stratocasters. That was kind of his sound. He liked them because, string bending was his thing, so. But he did play Rickenbackers also early on. Especially this particular one. He also played like a 1959 Rickenbacker Capri back in the day. But he actually told his bandmates that he liked the Rickenbackers more for rhythm playing, but not so much for lead, I guess you'd say, because he was just really a string bender.
Yeah, that would make sense. And I know from, time you and I spent together, that Rickenbacker definitely was cool-sounding. Rickenbackers in general, very cool, and definitely had a nice chime to the rhythm on songs.
I still, even playing that 12-string, I would bend the heck out of those strings on that Rickenbacker, that 381.
Yeah.
And it stayed in tune so great, too, even though, a lot of people don't do a lot of bends with 12 strings, because you got 12 strings, that's twice as many that can go out of tune.
Oh, yeah.
And the more you bend your strings, the more they can go out of tune. So, but, I guess that wasn't his thing, though.
Yeah, well, it took him kind of a while to get there, and obviously his big...
He played a lot of different guitars, but he's mostly known for, the Fenders.
Yeah, that's where he, really found his sound, and obviously... Fan of the blues growing up in Texas, even though there's a lot of other music that definitely matriculates through the Lone Star State. Him and his brother, Jimmy Vaughn, you know, definitely famous for playing in clubs before they were even old enough, especially in Stevie's case.
Oh, yes.
So it's called My Pride and Joy, and it was played by Stevie Ray Vaughan in one of his early bands. It's a Rickenbacker 450, and it's up for bid at the 2023 Vintage Guitar and Musical Instruments Auction at Heritage Auction House in Dallas, Texas. And what I'm going to do is share this link to listeners on the Backbeat Radio page so they can check that out and maybe go online unless you happen to be in Texas. But there's online bidding going on up until this weekend?
Yeah, I think it's the 8th, so that's Friday at 2 o'clock, I believe.
Okay.
And if you go online, you could click on the link. You basically type in Stevie Ray Vaughan, and there's a few different items. There's one Stratocaster that's for auction. That it's one that he autographed, but this one we're talking about is one that he actually played in when he was very young in a band called the Southern Distributor in Texas. And this is a guitar he played. And they said when during band breaks, because they basically played like rock covers and some psychedelic music with a psychedelic light show.
Oh, cool!
And you actually get some flyers. Whoever wins the guitar will actually get some Southern Distributor flyers that they actually made for the clubs and some business cards. But they were more like a rock band with a psychedelic light show. And Stevie Ray Vaughan basically said he wanted to work more blues into their repertoire, and they said no. And he said they said basically that wasn't their thing. And he said, well, I want to go play the blues, but the bass player of the band and Stevie would jam on some blues tunes during band breaks, playing songs like Summertime and some different blues standards, and that was more Stevie's thing. And then basically from that band on, when he left, he gave the guitar back to the lead singer and went about his blues way, and you know, played in a few more bands before, you know, doing the whole Stevie Ray Vaughan and Double Trouble thing.
And I think one of those stops in his career before he, you know, got on the map with the Double Trouble in his solo career was the David Bowie Let's Dance album and tour. I guess the Serious Moonlight tour. He was the touring guitarist, and
yep,
that pretty much put him in front of, you know, millions of eyeballs and millions of ears, and a lot of people who had the wherewithal to give him a record contract and set him up on his way.
I think it was between David Bowie and Jackson Browne that really helped him out, because I think Jackson Browne owned a recording studio, I think, that they recorded him at, I believe.
Yeah, I forgot about the Jackson Browne angle, definitely.
Yeah.
The thing with Stevie Ray Vaughan, obviously he, you know, kind of hit the scene, at least publicly and nationally, you know, early 80s, and you know, it was in August 1990. I was actually at overnight radio, and that was the night he passed away. But what had happened is on the overnight shift, you know, we did a lot of requests at my San Jose radio station, and there was a request I didn't get to, although I didn't realize, and the caller didn't know it either, but they requested Superstition, his version of that, you know, by Stevie Ray Vaughan. I ended up playing another Stevie Ray Vaughan song and not that one for whatever reason. Probably the playlist had something to do with that, but I woke up in the morning, or, you know, for me, noon, since I had done the overnight, and I was hearing the news about the helicopter accident, and those callers called me the next night and actually held me accountable. It was kind of a weird thing.
It's your fault.
That they were literally,
right?
Literally saying that, and then Superstition was kind of a, you know, an ominous song out of, you know, out of all the songs they could have requested, but they didn't say, hey, did you hear the news? And it wasn't on the, you know, the teletype yet. And this is early 1990s, so the internet was literally just being invented, you know, and not like now in the Twitterverse and everything happening so fast. But, and I had seen him once before in concert. He played Santa Cruz, and, you know, he had turned his life around because he used to kind of party a little too much, he said.
Yeah, I remember that period too.
But, but just a great guitar player and still one of my favorites, and just, tragic. He was, died at the age of 35, really, when he was just coming into his peak. You know, his playing had gotten better, I think, after he got sober, and, just taken way too soon. So a lot of times, I don't know why we, when people are gone and there's no more left, we definitely romanticize a little bit more what's left behind. So this is definitely a prime piece of rock and roll memorabilia. If you ended up with this, Willem, would you play this, or would you display this as a museum piece, or would you actually like take this in the studio and be creative with it?
It's a tough call. Basically, there's a few different factors. I mean, it's basically like a piece of art, but. A guitar is made to play, so whoever would get it, I would hope that they would play it. But there's another little factor in there when the strings. When I played it, I was like, man, I can't believe my hands are strumming this guitar on my fingers are touching the same fretboard as Stevie Ray Vaughan and all this. And I was talking to the lead singer of the band where I got it from, and Patrick McGuire, and I was asking him, hey, so what about the guitar, the tuning keys and any of the knobs and electronics, has any of this been modified since he played it? And he said, no, it's exactly the same condition as when he gave it back to me and I put it in the case, in 1970, I believe. That was a long time ago, and he said it only had been taken out of the case on a few occasions, and it had always been his possession. So
wow.
I was like, I paused for a second and I was like, well, what about the strings? And he said, I'm just gonna let you know that the strings that are on it are the ones that were on the guitar when he returned it to me.
Wow.
I was like, wow. Yeah,
so
and then, I was he wanted to change the strings for me so it would be fresh before he got it to me, and I was like, don't worry about it, I'll change the strings. But when I heard that, I was like, I don't know if I should change the strings. And I talked, a couple people said, don't change the strings, man. They got mojo on those strings.
Mm-hmm.
But it's probably got fingerprints of his too, I'm no forensics guy, but, he played it and the strings are there. And so when I heard that, I was like, I don't know. I handled it with kid gloves,
Like, right. Yeah, that is a tough call because, those strings are 50-something years old at this point, but, obviously you would want to change them if you're going to play, but then again, you're like, literally, it's so much more of a museum piece when you add that to it because, if he actually was working on bending those strings when he was playing with, that early band in the 60s, that's pretty crazy that, you could actually scrape his probably dead skin off of some of those strings just to make it that much more authentic.
This band and the guitar were featured in the pretty notable book called Stevie Ray Vaughan, Day by Day, Night After Night, the early years edition. And on page 15, you can see the guitar and him and all. But, it's interesting because, he was in the band in 1969 and 1970, and, the other players are all still playing music. They're all still there in Texas, and I believe all three of the others are still in Texas. Patrick is in Galveston, and Daryl's in Dallas. But but if you look up the history of the bands he was in, that was his fourth band. He was very young. He played on the audition. He played some kind of boogie blues song. I forget for his audition, but he did it note for note, and they were like, "This kid's hired." And but can you believe there's actually a band that he was in? It's noted that he was in it. He had mentioned it, I guess, before, but the other members, no one knows their names. I think the band was called. It was a funny kind of name, like a psychedelic kind of name.
As bands at that time definitely were, it seems like.
It was, imagine if you were in a band with Stevie Ray Vaughan and you didn't even know it.
Right.
He was just some guy, back in the, I guess they were teens in the late 60s or something, but.
Yeah.
I'd have to look that band name up. But it says when on the list of his bands, it says that, you know, he was in his band, because each category lists the names of each band and band members.
Mm-hmm.
And for that band, that particular band, it just has his name, and it says other members unknown.
Yeah.
So like, wow, at least two or three guys were in a band with Stevie Ray Vaughan, and they don't remember, no one remembers. But I guess you got to say, you know, it was the 60s, so.
Yeah. You know that, and of course, you know, at that point, you know, everything, well, the music industry was so young, especially rock bands, like, you know, if you didn't make it in a year or two, you figured, well, that ain't going to work. I better go to that fallback job or, you know, go to college or, you know, sometimes guys would end up getting married and, you know, a lot of people just didn't stick with it as a career. And, you know, then there's guys like Stevie Ray Vaughan who were kind of destined to end up going further and taking their playing to another level. So that's some...
Yeah.
Interesting. You know, a lot of the rock biographies talk about, you know, old band members from the 60s, from like Tom Petty and, you know, those guys who end up, you know, running into their friends later. So this auction is going through this week, and it's at the Heritage Auctions website, and it looks like the current bid is a little over $10,000. So it's not like you can just go into Guitar Center and buy this off the rack, although in the Hollywood Guitar Center, I have seen guitars priced at this level and even higher.
It's at a great price right now too, you know, so
it really is. You know, I mean, people might, there are, you know, guitars that will go for $10,000, you know custom made stuff or even more, or other collectors. But I know that you know, that owner of the Indianapolis Colts NFL team, that guy's bought a lot of different memorabilia from, you know, he's got like
I talked to his guitar wrangler, I guess you would call it. I don't know his exact position, but he has a guy that finds guitars for him to take. They go on these tours, and they bring certain guitars, and they were, you know, definitely impressed by this one. But, you know, it's at the auction, basically.
Oh, yeah.
They have certain guitars that they take out on the road, and they have some that they keep in storage. And Jim Irsay just has a huge collection, so... in the process, you know, I decided, hey, you know what? Auctions are great fun. So let's, I've sent some of my guitars to Heritage Auctions in the past, and it's always fun to see just people, like, you know, because somebody out there loves something more than anybody else in the universe, I guess you'd say, right? And there's nothing going to stop them from getting, you know, whatever piece of memorabilia or coins or artwork, you know.
Right.
So I think it is better overall than just, you know, going to another collector, like, you know, nothing against Jim Irsay and or the Indianapolis Colts, but, you know, he's got over 200, I think over 200 rare guitars owned by, like, Kurt Cobain and others.
Yeah, Kurt Cobain, he's got a Ringo set and some Clapton memorabilia, I think. Speaking of Eric Clapton, there's some of his guitars up in this auction, and they go to help fund his Crossroads Recovery Center, I think, which is in Antigua, which is a great place to go, especially,
yeah,
you know.
I was actually the first bidder on it. The bidding on that, it's called, I think it's called the Crash. It's a painted guitar. It's a Fender Stratocaster, I think 2019. It's one he played in some concerts. And they started the bidding at $0, so I'm like, hey, I'm going to throw in the first dollar.
Mm-hmm.
But, so it's up to like $41,000 right now.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, that particular guitar for this auction, as part of the Eric Clapton Crossroads auction, it the proceeds go to that treatment center in Antigua for addiction.
And ironically, Clapton was playing that show that happened to be Stevie Ray Vaughan's last show that was just outside of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And yeah. Had he been on a helicopter, you know, we wouldn't have had him either. So that's a bit ironic.
I should also mention another one of Stevie Ray's friends has a guitar in this very same auction. That's Greg Allman.
Cool.
I think it's a Gibson Les Paul Custom that he played in some concerts. That's up for auction also. It's all the same auction this Friday.
Yeah, and this is at Heritage House auctions, and I'm gonna post the link on the Backbeat Radio page on social media, and if you follow me, you probably have seen that already, and I have a picture of Willem with this cool guitar. Now, you also, Willem, you kind of work with getting you kind of work in selling sort of rare guitars besides the auction guitars now currently, correct?
Oh yeah, I've been doing that pretty regularly, especially when COVID started up. I picked up a few pieces. I got a drum cymbal, a Slingerland crash cymbal that was part of Dr. John's drum kit. And, I got pictures of him playing it and signing it and all that. I got it because I thought it was cool, and I was like, hey, I wonder what this can go for. So I put it up online, and then I decided I'm going to keep this one, you know, just because it's too cool. I don't want anybody else to have it. But then I started getting guitars and fixing them. I did some fret jobs and some repairs, and I get little stuff and fix them up and sell them. And then I, got into the rare stuff, you know, old Martins, all-age Rickenbackers. I've sold a lot of Rickenbackers. You know, I find them, and I, you know, clean them up. Some of them are in immaculate condition when I get them, so I don't have to. A lot of old Fenders, Gibsons, just so it didn't have to be old though. You know, just I kind of gravitate towards stuff that's hard to find.
Yeah,
Had some Tony Iommi Signature Series Les Pauls from the early 2000s.
Wow, he's typically an SG player too.
And another thing is, insurance is high on these guitars to ship them, and it's like. The people that buy them often don't want to chance, even if their money's protected with insurance, they don't want to chance, you know, that what they really, really want is going to be, you know, splintered like toothpicks when it arrives.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes I'll travel to, I'll fly wherever to hand deliver the items.
So you end up buying two airline tickets so your guitar can have a seat and not be handled by the, staff at whatever airlines?
Yeah, well, you know, I bring it as a carry-on, and I've had them say, for some reason when I fly, I'm always like in the last section of people that are bored. And one time I was bringing a 1927 Martin across the country, and to my friend Kim, and basically. They were saying, hey, we're going to have to check this baggage. We're going to put it in cargo. I said, I'll have to go in cargo with it, or I'm not getting on this plane because this needs to go as a carry-on, or I'm not getting on. And they kind of laughed, and I was able to get it on the plane. But, yes, I mean, it's fragile. That's why I'm flying with it. I'm not going to let it go in cargo.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, and speaking of rare guitars, getting on that tangent, I know Kirk Hammett recently spent I think at least $1 million, maybe more, for Peter Green's Les Paul that he played back in the original Fleetwood Mac called Greenie. And I guess Kirk Hammett has actually he's played it and not just displaying it. And that's a guy who's got, you know, tons of guitars and, you know, could display something super expensive because, you know, the Metallica money.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was just talking how, and, you know, and you've mentioned this when we were hanging out, sometimes guitars pick you, and, you know, you might get a guitar and you just start strumming it, and all of a sudden you write a song off the guitar. It just comes out of it just by checking it out.
Yeah. I mean, I was telling somebody recently, you know, I've experienced it many times, and people are like, why do you have so many guitars? They always ask, whenever somebody has more than a handful of guitars, a lot of people that don't play say, why do you have so many guitars? So
right.
Every guitar does something different to you. And sometimes you just pick up something and a song comes out of it. It makes you play something and you've never played it ever before in your life. And now you got a brand new song that came out of this guitar. It's almost like it's a living entity or something.
Oh, yeah. And you know,
maybe it's just mojo carrying on from whoever made it, but wherever they made it, you know, whether it be in America or overseas. But, I mean, I have, you know, they got expensive guitars. They got guitars that are rare. But some of my best guitars I've played have been stuff that I found accidentally. I got a Seagull that was made in Canada. It's they're nice guitars, but they're not like super expensive, and obviously I got it from somebody in New Orleans for $20, and it was just when I met them to purchase it, you know, it was just leaning up against the wall inside this restaurant. I picked it up, it had a crack in it. It looked like somebody obviously had stepped on it or sat on it. It might get a little noisy out here though, I'm stepping outside. If, you know, somebody either sat on this car or they stepped on it, there's a giant crack in it, but it stays in tune and sounds better than, like, 95% of the cars, you know, I've played. But you never can tell.
Yeah. Yeah, guitar, they do have some, I believe, a little bit of a spiritual entity passing through. Sometimes a guitarist, another guy might tune it up and play it, and, I don't know, there was times you would play my acoustic guitar and give it back, and it played better for some reason. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess the more life it has, the better it sounds, the more strum, you know.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely, you know, there's a lot of, you know, cool things that definitely go into it. And, you know, again, when you're inspired and can do different things and you're, you know, advanced or talented player, you're going to be able to pull those songs out. How much more time do you have for us, Willem? Because I want to talk a little bit about, you know, about how we met and how much more music have you put out there online? Have you been writing songs? And
I got this Christmas song. I'll send you the link to it so you can put it out there. But yeah, I wrote it last year. I recorded it. They got some Louisiana radio stations like in Lafayette area that play it. It's actually a song about Santa Claus coming down to Louisiana and trading in the cookies and milk for a gumbo.
That sounds kind of cool.
It's pretty funny. I'm trying to put together a little video for YouTube also on it. That type of thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, at this point, there's so many... You know, there's a lot of room for new Christmas songs. You know, the standards are cool, and they've been done. We all grew up listening to them, but, you know, there's always room for a new twist on the Christmas song theme. I mean, if Grandma Got Ran Over by a Reindeer could be a hit, so could Santa having some gumbo.
It's a nice arrangement on it, too. Roby mixed this. I had it recorded by my buddy Lewis at his studio in New Orleans, and then we sent it to Roby, and
all right. Well, sounds like a little rental car driving off in the background there.
Yeah. It's getting a little bit noisy.
So we're going to take a quick break and then come back and play a couple songs here from Willem McCormick. And what's a good place for people to find you online if they or where can they look up your music? You're on iTunes,
YouTube, or whatever.
All right, YouTube, definitely. Apple Music and Spotify as well?
Oh, yeah. It's Willem and Dakota. W-I-L-L-E-M-N, and then Dakota, like the state.
All right. Well, I'm going to play a couple songs here from Willem in just a moment, and we return from Backbeat Radio right after this.
William Shatner, and this is Jimmy. Animals like Jimmy are often left behind by people fleeing hurricanes, fires, floods, and earthquakes. These abandoned animals cannot survive on their own. If you must evacuate your home, please never leave an animal behind. If you absolutely cannot take your animal with you, never leave him helplessly chained or caged. Many animals die because they cannot escape fires or rising waters. Animals need your help. Thank you.
Call PETA today, 757-622-PETA.
See straight and save. These days, everyone seems to see things differently. But from your eyes, you can see straight and save. Right now, get glasses online at 70% off at Glasses USA. There's a 100% guarantee, too, on top brand men, women, multifocal, and even prescription sunglasses. Visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Glasses USA, and you will see straight and save.
To get your message out, social media is great, but if you want to be picked up by major media outlets, let's face it, just using social media makes your chances, well, slim to none. If you want to improve your chances, put your message in the right place. A press release on PR Web. Affordable, easy to use, and with great customer service, there's no reason not to use PR Web. Visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on PR Web now and get started.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Man, thanks for sticking around for Backbeat Radio after that quick break. Literally a quick break. Our friend Willem McCormick, our guest for December, talking about heritage guitar auctions, had actually he's now transported to a better place from dealing with the rental car people. Willem, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Of course. So we left off kind of talking about the guitar auctions and some other stuff, but kind of left off talking about your music. And, you know, for those who may or may not know, I actually, Willem was brave enough to let me play bass in his band for a while.
Oh, yeah. A good while.
Yeah. No, those were good times. And I think one of our first shows was a Christmas show. And then there I was on stage at the Viper Room.
Yep.
That was a good time. So
yeah, those Christmas shows down in Huntington Beach were always awesome, too.
Oh, yeah. And then I'm going to have to send you a link to my interview with Anton from Brian Jonestown Massacre, because I told him how we did his song and turned it into a Christmas song, which he kind of liked. But then he said at the end, you could do that or you could send me a royalty check, either one.
Yeah, I will send him a royalty check. Yeah, that was always so cool. We got turned into the Brian Jonestown Massacre song into a Christmas song.
Oh, yeah.
And it went over well. Merry Christmas to everyone.
Yeah.
That was so cool. I need to start playing that again.
Yeah, no, it's a great, great song. And, yeah, I got to interview him a while ago, last year here on this show. He was on Skype from Germany. And,
That's so cool that he knows about us doing that song.
Yeah, I did send him the video. I had to find it on YouTube and send it to his people who, you know, reached out and got that to him. But yeah, that was cool. I caught him on a really good day. It was a good time. So he can have his moments, which apparently their recent tour in Australia, I guess they sort of reverted back to their appearance at the Viper Room, which of course you can see in that movie Dig, which
a great movie.
It is. And the funny thing about that movie, you know, we're living in the same apartment building, and across the street was, I think it was a Blockbuster or a Hollywood Video, one of the two. And I found the movie over there, and I would always rent it, and I'd go to rent it again, and I'm like, it's not here. I'm like, who the heck is watching that movie? And it turned out it was you.
I remember, yeah.
We're like the only two.
Renting it over and over again.
Yeah. I was like, okay, we got to be friends. And, you know, it's kind of like, when I was watching that movie the first time, I'm like, man, I want to be in a crazy cool band like Brian Jonestown Massacre. They just, I don't know. It was good stuff. And then,
well, you know, it was funny because when I did the My Charlatan video, I picked out this really cool cliff. You know, I always like to make a music video on a cliff. Mm-hmm. But I found my first cliff video for the My Charlatan song. We did it on this cliff, and the video director, he was listening to the song. We were, you know, the background music as we were doing the video, and he's like, you know, you guys remind me of Brian Jonestown Massacre. And at the time, I don't think I was familiar with him, so later I looked him up, and I was like, man, these guys are really cool. And then I guess I found that video at Blockbuster. And was that a Blockbuster or was it a Hollywood Video?
I think it was
Artesia Boulevard.
Yeah, it was a Blockbuster, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and then from that, I was like, man, I really like these guys. And, you know, we started doing that song, and then it became a Christmas song.
Yeah, no, that was cool. Then you and I saw him at the Wiltern, and I think that girl Amanda Lee Richards or Richardson that sings with them from time to time was talking to us, and I don't think we recognized her until later, going, man, that was Amanda, their friend.
Oh, yeah. I remember that concert.
Yeah. Now, they're...
That was great.
Yeah, super, super cool band. And, well, anyway, what about the experience recording in North Hollywood there and how you met Roby, who was the producer? Didn't you meet him playing in one of the bigger L.A. clubs?
Yeah, I was playing at the Met, and he was running sound, and I forget who else was on the bill. It was a really good show. Maybe it was Wayne the Dragon Hancock or somebody. But, yeah, I was in the, and he asked me, he came up and asked me, we were just talking about stuff, and he said, so what kind of music do you listen to? Like, what's your personal stuff you listen to? I said, well, I like stuff, you know, songwriter-driven, like, catchy, snappy pop guitar, you know, rock, like Marshall Crenshaw, Freddie Johnson, and he was like, I worked on Johnson's, you know, Black and Blue album. And I was like, no way. Yeah. And so he mixed the show that night, and then we got in touch, and just he had this studio out in North Hollywood, and him and his friend Kim lived there in North Hollywood, and they had a studio in a backyard, and it was just guitars and recording and perfection, pretty much. It was like the best recording experience I ever had. And then on top of that, you know, their buddies, like, there's no telling who might stop by, like Bernard Fowler, you know, Mick Jagger's, you know, backup singer from the Rolling Stones might stop by,
cause right,
he lived nearby, and he recorded there also, and sometimes he stopped by, you know. But it was just a great studio because it was like an old barn that was converted into a studio, and they had a big high ceilings over the drums that they could hang the microphones to kind of get the, you know, Bonham's sounding, you know, When the Levee Breaks type drum sound.
Right.
And so, we started there, and then, you know, just kept recording forever, it seems. And then they moved the studio to Greenbush. Remember that? Greenbush Avenue in North Hollywood?
Oh, yeah, and it's like every other corner in that area was like Thai restaurant, dispensary, yeah, and strip joint. And then each block was literally Thai restaurant. And that one...
If you remember, there was a barbed wire fence across the street from the studio.
Oh, yeah.
And with it was the warehouse for the Church of Scientology.
Yeah.
And in the same building as the new location of the studio it was a crack... I wouldn't say it's a cryogenics lab, but it's where they built the machines for cryogenics.
Yeah.
In the same building. It was a... It was cool.
Yeah, definitely the experience of recording, besides the recording in itself, was quite a bit. I mean, we really got into that Thai restaurant.
I don't know if you remember. You remember Juliet Lewis's band?
Right.
Also had a room in the studio that right down the hall. She borrowed our toilet paper.
Yeah.
I remember Dakota mentioning that, just so happy that Juliet Lewis borrowed our toilet paper for the bathroom. Because there was one bathroom in the building, and all the musicians and all the studios had to use the same bathroom. And the rule was, if you're recording that day, bring your own toilet paper.
Yeah, pretty much. So where would listeners be able to find that album? I know it's on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else?
Yes, it's pretty much all the usual suspects have it, you know?
Yeah.
We're doing, I mean, there's talk about having it released on vinyl, which
nice.
Would be cool. Versus, I mean, you know, it's online streaming for anybody who wants to hear it, but we're talking about putting it on vinyl.
That'd be cool. It was funny because you mentioned the... how someone mentioned the Brian Jonestown Massacre influence without you knowing about it. I was taking a walk a few weeks ago, and my shuffle came up, and from time to time, you know, songs on that album will pop in, but there was one of the deeper tracks, I forget, I think it was Heart Crashers, And
yeah, Heart Crashes.
Just the way it came on, I'm like, is this a Jonestown song? And I pulled out my phone. I go, no, it's Willem and Dakota. So even years later, I go, okay, this is, you know, kind of what someone was hearing, that like very laid-back shoegaze kind of sound. And I looking back, it's a fun album. I mean, being around you and her and recording with Roby and all of that, that was just a good time. Good memories for me. And, you know, I was happy to contribute a couple
yeah,
bass riffs on there.
It was really great. It's hard to one up that recording experience. I don't know if it's possible. It was just the right time, the right vibe. There was a lot of like just things that kind of came together at the same time. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, Chris Voss from you know, the band, the record company, came in. I guess he was fresh in town from Wisconsin, and I needed some extra lap steel on Too Bad, and he came in and he heard it, and he's like, can I please play the lead guitar on this? Can I do a solo on this song?
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know, man. I never let anybody play a lead solo on any of my albums besides me. And then he just let it rip, and it was like Allman Brothers solo or something. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, okay, we're going to keep it. And then he went on from that. He brought in the record company band to record there, and then did a demo. And then, shoot, next thing you know, he's opening up for Buddy Guy and John Mayer, I think, at the Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
On Jimmy Kimmel.
Wow.
A couple times a year, he's really exploded. And yeah, like him and there was so many cool people that played on that record.
Yeah, that violin player, Jameson Hollister, I think his name was. I've seen him do some things from then since
then
too.
He did the soundtrack for some sitcom show a few years ago. And it was funny because he was fresh in from Mississippi. And, you know, and we called him into the studio in North Hollywood to do some pedal steel and some fiddle. He does the fiddle on Somewhere Along the Way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, he was playing on American Idol. He was the official backup band pedal steel player for all the people that were doing like the country songs. And then he joined Priscilla Presley's band, toured the world. He played with, John Fogerty too.
Wow.
I don't know if it was just that American Idol appearance by John Fogerty, or he might have done some more gigs, but yeah. There's a lot of good pedal steel in that album too, especially the stuff done by Dave Easley, you know, who I play with every once in a while, still out here in Louisiana when I can.
Cool.
But
so I'm gonna go ahead and play the title track, or yeah, play that song right now, Somewhere Along the Way, and then we'll be back in a moment and close out the show with Willem McCormick. And one more time, talk about the Heritage, put up that link and tell people where to go find the Stevie Ray Vaughan and other auctions at Heritage Guitar Auctions. But I'm going to go ahead and play Somewhere Along the Way right now.
Somewhere along the way, must have got under my skin, and I got something to say, but I don't know where to begin. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Should have hung out in Thibodeau a little bit longer. Take to New Orleans. Yeah,
Well, is that the name of the album, Somewhere Along the Way? Well, I forget the name of the full album there, Willem.
No, it's actually called Basically Anyway.
Basically Anyway, that's right.
You know, I was talking about, you know, there's a label that might basically release this stuff on vinyl.
Uh-huh.
So I was, like, thinking, the album cover looks great. I love the me and Dakota on the cliff, you know, over the ocean. But I was like, you know what? I don't know about. I might want to change that name of the album. I'm just not. You know, if you release it, you can remaster it and you can do stuff. But I think I might actually just give it a new title because, you know, basically anyway, it sounds cool. But I have other album titles that I like better, like Ouch and Time to Find the Guggenheimer.
That one was always kind of funny, you know, Time to Find the Guggenheimer, which is, how you came up with that, I don't know. That's kind of cool, though.
Hey, I don't know when, it just popped in my head, sort of like when we were talking about you grab a guitar, and all of a sudden you're just hitting some different notes and chords, and you just came out of nowhere. Well, that song title came out of nowhere, and I was like, okay, let's do that. And it's funny, there's an episode of Seinfeld. And, you know, George Costanza is talking to a girl or a guy, I don't know who it was, but they're at an art museum. I think it's a Guggenheim Museum.
Yeah.
And they're asking him a question about this and that in the art world, whatever. And George Costanza says, well, I don't know really because I'm not that much of a Guggenheimer. So I'm like, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pull that audio and drop it into a song somewhere, name drop that as a song intro or something.
Yeah, that would be great.
So you've entered the Christmas music entree. What's the title to this new Christmas song you got, Willem?
It's called Bayou Christmas Night.
Bayou Christmas Night.
Basically, yep, and it's you know, it's about Santa Claus coming down from the North Pole, and his first stop is Eunice, Louisiana, which is right next to Lafayette. And he comes down, and he decides he wants to try some gumbo, and, you know, the lyrics talk about getting rid of the cookies, you know, forget about the cookies and the milk tonight, because Santa likes chicken, Santa likes rice. so he gets a gumbo, and then he goes around, he goes through the different states, he flies up the coast of California, goes up to New York City, all over. I wouldn't say he passes up the Carolinas and promises him he'll be back later, but there's some funny illustrations that are going to go with the video.
All right.
And he goes back up to Mrs. Claus, you know, so.
Now, I like
it. It's a funny little song. Here's a cool thing about the song, though. I was recording it at Lewis's studio in New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
And I'm singing the song, and, you know, a lot of my stuff is kind of mid-tempo, and I might have this kind of, like, mood to a certain amount of mid-tempo rocker songs or whatever. It was just, like, the music was more upbeat than my singing or whatever. And he's like, maybe if you were a little more excited and more like Jim Dandy, you know, Black Hook or Arkansas,
wow.
Right?
Yeah.
If you could be a little bit more upbeat like that, like try to channel that energy instead of kind of sounding like you're on heroin or something.
Oh, man.
you know, because I guess I sang it more laid back or whatever, and it was, you know, but then I actually kind of imagined, like, if Jim Dandy was playing his, you know, on his, you know, what do you call it, his washboard, scratching his washboard, jumping around. What would Jim Dandy do, you know, from Black Arkansas? And I kind of imagined my head, what would he do in this song? So I tried to inject a little bit more energy and humor also into the song than just trying to make it sound just doing a regular rock song. You know,
yeah.
Whatever.
Well, so, that's an interesting influence from the engineer. So we're going to go ahead and wrap up today's show and the December. And yeah, basically, it's the last Backbeat Radio show for 2023. Of course, we'll be doing shows in the new year. But let's go ahead and play that tune one more time. Willem, where's the Heritage Auction online for the Stevie Ray Vaughan, Clapton, the Allman Guitars, and all of that? And
HA.com.
And one more time?
HA.com.
HA.com for Heritage Auctions. And the name of this song as we wrap up?
Bayou Christmas Night.
Bayou Christmas Night with some Jim Dandy from Black Oak, Arkansas. Many of our listeners might have to go look him up. Willem, thanks for taking time out of your day to be with us on Backbeat Radio. I highly appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
He's always got his first stop and last stop every year. Bring all the children joy and Christmas cheer. For 1,711 miles away, Santa's elves are working the hearts away. Santa likes chicken, Santa likes rice, so put away the cookies and milk tonight. Make a jungle light, gumbo's on fire. Santa's got his own wish, alright. It's gonna be a Bayou Christmas night. Reindeer getting on his sleigh, flying up the Cali coast, San Francisco Bay. He likes to see the lights in the night on the New York sky. Maybe next year he'll give the Carolinas a try. Santa likes chicken, Santa likes rice, so put away the cookies tonight. Make a jambalaya, gumbo's on fire. Santa's got his own wish, alright. It's gonna be a Bayou Christmas night. claws where he's needed so. I hope you boys and girls enjoyed your cheer. So make sure to be good, he'll be back next year. Satellite's chicken, satellite's rice. So put away the cookies and milk tonight. Make a jambalaya, a gumbo on fire. Santa's got his own wish, alright. Satellite's chicken, satellite's rice. So put away the cookies and milk tonight. Make a jambalaya, a gumbo on fire. Santa's got his own wish, alright. It's gonna be a bayou Christmas night.
And thanks for tuning in to Backbeat Radio. That's our December show. Thanks again to Willem McCormick, and check out HA.com for those Heritage Auction guitars. Find Willem's music on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube Music, and all the other usual places. I'm Jay Cruz signing off for Backbeat Radio until 2024. Thanks for tuning in.